And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, Will. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. And I appreciate you getting up so early in the morning, Okinawa time, to join us. So thank you very much for that as well. I'd be remiss if I did not thank you for your service to our country on behalf of all of my listeners. Thank you for that, too.
You're welcome.
Well, good. Now, I want to dive right into it because you were with the Air Command and you served under two different presidents. Tell me, which presidents were you serving under as the chief intelligence officer for the Air Command?
For the Emergency Airborne Command Post, it was President Carter and President Reagan.
Carter and Reagan. All right. So that goes back a couple of years. And
During the Cold War, though.
So it was obviously a very important post that you had. Tell us about the Mobile Air Command, because that is something that we see in the movies quite frequently. However, is it accurately portrayed in the movies about how sophisticated this airplane is and how sophisticated the communications are from the Mobile Air Command?
Well, yes. When I was there, I served on for 3 years, and we... Back then, say in the early 80s, it was considered a $250,000 airplane with very redundant communication capabilities and much more capabilities than Air Force One. And therefore, when President Carter or President Reagan went any place, we always had to follow them around because in case we went to nuclear war, had an emergency or anything like that, they could get on our airplane and conduct the war from our airplane.
All right. Now, it's very interesting to me that you would then follow the presidents around. What happens if the war broke out while the presidents were in midair? What was the contingency plan for that?
Well, we would have a land as soon as we could, and he would deplane from the Air Force One and board our airplane and would take off.
All right. Now, during that time, we transitioned Air Force Ones because President Carter was flying the old 707 Air Force One, and I think Reagan, it was during his term that they transitioned from the 707 to the 747. My question for you, Will, is this. Why didn't they just build all of the technology on your command plane onto Air Force One and consolidate down to one jet?
Well, we were a battle staff that stood alert 24/7 for many years, and out at Andrews Air Force Base, right next to Air Force One. But there were many things on the E-4B that had antennas and communication devices to communicate with the submarines worldwide, and that you just wouldn't need on Air Force One as a State Department sort of airplane.
I see. All right. My guest is Will Watson. We're talking about his time on the Mobile Air Command airplane under Presidents Carter and Reagan. So let's talk about what would happen in the case of an emergency. Naturally, you were drilled on this. You knew what would happen. Who would be the first person that the president would call in the case of a national emergency where he was airborne with you?
Well, he would be in a stateroom and receiving briefings by the battle staff, counting down in a matrix or a checklist to see what was happening worldwide and if we had emergency. I actually went to World War III for 8 minutes myself.
You did? Tell us about that. So this was a simulation that you were doing?
No, well, we ran exercises every time we went out. But one time, early in the 80s, and I buried this in my book, The National Emergency Airborne Command Post, kind of deep because it was a faith-promoting story. But one night I was in the shower and the klaxon went off and I put my Kojak on the light and the security opened the door, the gates of the compound, and we rushed to the airplane and the quick start team already had the engines going and we boarded the aircraft and we usually taxied to the end of the runway at Andrews Air Force Base. And then a Marine helicopter would bring out the president or an acting president to run a war game.
All right.
One night, we went out, and of course, on our exercise, we'd pick up a message as soon as we got on the airplane, and it would say, exercise, exercise, exercise. You know, missiles coming in, and then you'd run a war game, you know. One night, and I was on the battle staff that night, we went out there, we jumped on the airplane, grabbed the message, and it said, real world, real world, real world. 300 intercontinental ballistic missiles launched from the Soviet Union, da-di-da-di-da. And so we fast-taxied in the runway, and there was not a Marine helicopter. There was not the president. There was not anybody. There wasn't a general officer to run an exercise. And all we had, and then guess what?
What?
This million, this $250 million airplane, you know, Murphy's Law, if anything go right, you know. Anyway, we lost contact with the White House. We lost contact with the Pentagon. We lost contact with all of our command posts. And all of a sudden, all we had is a message saying, real world, ICBMs are coming in.
Well, wow.
My job was to track the Soviet submarines off the East Coast to be able to brief the president at any time, the launch to impact times to major target areas in that Washington, D.C. area from submarine. Now, submarine missiles would get there in, 7, 8, 9 minutes.
Right.
The ICBMs would get to their targets in 25 minutes. So we're at the end of the runway, you know, in about 7 minutes, and the team chief asked me, I was a major at the time, he says, Major Watson, what's the launch impact time on Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C.? I says, you know, you got about 40 seconds, you know, and so he said, launch. And so we launched, and we were in the air for a few minutes before we finally got in contact, and we were going through a matrix mark, we're putting on our sidearms for human reliability. We had a human reliability program. We had a 15-man battle staff of Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps field grade officers. And the idea of the human reliability program was that, you know, if you weren't reliable doing your job, you could be shot.
Right. Frightening.
Because if you're going to kill 180 million people in your first laydowns of your ICBM worldwide, one other person not doing their job wouldn't make that much difference. So, yeah, the hair went up on the back of my neck and everything, and I just, oh, wow. You know, and I knew my family back in Omaha, Nebraska. In fact, I knew because the Strategic Air Command headquarters in Omaha, I knew that, well, my family would be vaporized in 15 minutes, you know, and I'll be in the air and all that sort of stuff. But still, I was doing my job and getting ready to do all the things I need to do for the battle staff. Anyway, we finally got contact with the White House, and they said, why did you launch? It was a computer foul up at Colorado Springs, Colorado. Somebody got human error. Somebody got a exercise tape, you know, a war game tape, and got it into the real world network. And so it came out real world, real world, real world. And we thought we were going to, well, of course, you know, launch the bombers. You want to get your intercontinental ballistic missiles out of their silos before the incoming missiles come in and destroy them. So we were really, really close for giving the command, and we collected, being the National Emergency Airborne Command, we collected all command to us, all authority to us. And so theoretically, we had the president on board, which we didn't. That could say, yes, time to get our ICBMs out of their silos and on their way to their targets. And we came really close from giving that command. And then all of a sudden we got contact the White House. And they said, oh, gee, it's a human error.
A frightening prospect. My guest is Will Watson. He was the chief intelligence officer aboard the National Emergency Airborne Command jet. He was also the author of a brand new book, which is The Substitute Mormon Chaplain, and we'll come to that in a minute. But the reason that I asked you on the show, Will, was exactly exemplified in that story that you just gave me, and that is the dilemma that you faced being on board, knowing that the world could be at war, and balancing your sense of duty to the country, your sense of job in the military, versus the thought, the possibility of losing your entire family, all of your friends in a nuclear attack. How do you balance such things, and how do you grapple with those kinds of issues?
It was very difficult. You know, you say private prayers and that sort of thing, and you know, you think of your family and that sort of stuff, but anyway, it was really a tough situation. All the battle staff was going through the same thing. They were thinking of their family. Actually, they think you can't do multitasking, but you can.
You can?
You can do all your things together, and you can still think of your family at the same time. And the hair was up on the back of my neck saying, this can't be true. The Russians are in Afghanistan, yes, but there's no indications that there's going to be a first strike by the Soviets on us. And why is this happening? And you're trying to reason all this sort of thing out. And anyway, it was very, very, of course, huge investigation. And
I can only imagine. Yeah,
we signed affidavits that we wouldn't say anything about it for many years. And of course, then there was a movie come out, you know, War Games, and they didn't hit it right. They only covered ICBMs. They didn't cover the submarine launch missiles, which were real critical at the first part of a nuclear exchange during the Cold War. And so,
very true. Anyway. Very true. My guest is Will Watson. He's joining us from Okinawa, Japan. And Will, looking at being the chief intelligence officer on the National Emergency Airborne Command Post, the JET that's up there, now I learned that the JET is going to be retired, that the National Airborne Emergency Command is being retired. What does that mean to our national security that post and that airplane is being retired?
Well, I can only give you my opinion, and that is that world can always switch back, you know. For instance, Putin himself is a former career KGB, you know.
And a hardliner.
And a hardliner. You never know. There's, I don't know what the percentage is. There's still, we think about, well, we're coming up with new missiles and things, but how about the nuclear weapons have been destroyed? So say the thousands that the United States have and the thousands that Russia have, and of course the Ukraine broke off from Russia, and so Ukraine has their share of the old Soviet missiles. So they've got so many there. So you never know when things can flip back. But you know, I mean, this is my own personal opinion, but you know, we would have the successors to the Constitution come out there and run war games during the Cold War. Now, Carter was just as good as Reagan. Reagan was just as good as Carter, and so were their staff members. Now, my question today in my mind is, hey, you know, I would rather vote for the man and not for the Republicans or the Democrats or anything like that. I'd like to say, boy, wouldn't it be neat to have the presidential candidates come out there and see if they could run an 8-minute nuclear war countdown, and could they make the decision, hold, withhold, strike, withhold, strike. That's what we had to do for 8 minutes, is see what targets we were to strike. Don't strike this one in Czechoslovakia because the Pope is there, or whatever the reason is. But we had some people come out there that represented the administration that couldn't make decisions within that 8 minutes.
My.
You know, would say, all right, so why? They did say, like, why should I kill 180 million Soviets and Chinese and everything when we're only going to miss, you know, get 160 million killed? And, you know, the rationalize like that was, hey, you've got 30 seconds or we're going to lose all of our ICBMs. They just couldn't make the decision.
That's a frightening thought. My guest is Will Watson. He was the chief intelligence officer aboard the National Emergency Airborne Command JET. Now he is an author. And, Will, you've just come out with a brand new book. It's called The Substitute Mormon Chaplain. Tell us about that.
Well, I wrote a couple of dramatic romance novels, and I said, you know, I need to really write something down about some of the great spiritual experiences that I've had in my life. And I went to Vietnam twice. There was no LDS chaplains there the first time, so besides being an intelligence officer, I had to be the president of the church there, called the district president over the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps, and had a lot of adventures. I got caught behind enemy lines with the sacrament trays and hymn books and a counselor who was in a white suit trying to hide in the jungle, you know, and things like that. A lot of adventures, you know. We wouldn't have received any awards for camouflage training, you know, a 6'4" guy in a white suit with me trying to get to a Marine compound. wasn't too good, but had a lot of adventures, faith promoting, things like that. And when I got to the toward the end of the book a little bit, I said, you know, one of my big faith-promoting stories in my whole life was that adventure I just told you about on the National Emergency Airborne Command Post, because it was quite a Thanksgiving when it was all over, knowing that we didn't, through human error, create nuclear war
yeah.
for the world.
Yeah, amazing. My guest has been Will Watson. He is author of the brand new book, The Substitute Substitute Mormon. And thank you so much for being my guest, Will, here on Brainstorm. And if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Well, they just go to Amazon.com, go to books under Will Watson, and you'll see the three books that I've written. The last one is The Substitute Mormon Chaplain, which has this story we just talked about. Buried under a title about, substitute Mormon chaplain, and say, well, why didn't he say the National Emergency Airborne Command Post or something like that? Well, it just happened to be a faith-promoting story among other faith-promoting stories.
I understand. Will, thank you so much for getting up so early to be with us here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.